Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
It's my mom.
And Glenn Leverins.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
That's how I know.
This is Morning Air on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. It's Glenn Leverins along with Sarah Tafoya. John Morales has the day off. Going to have some fun this hour talking about fun and games. Yeah, family life is all fun and games, isn't it? Well, we're going to talk about board games and some good that could come out of that. And then we'll get to the serious business of dealing with ageism in the workplace and finding that next job. Bruce Lockenauer joins us at the bottom of the hour as well. Sarah Tafoya, did you grow up playing a lot of board games around the house?
Yeah, we were a board game family. It wasn't like the thing we always did, but we played a lot of Uno, and we played, you know, Sorry. I remember that one. That was a good one. Perfection. We played all those fun little games. Hungry Hippos was a big, big game around our house. But, you know, there was a lot of things. The thing about the games, I found out when I started playing with other kids and other families that we were not playing by the actual rules of the game. We had somehow adapted our own version of some of these games, and so we would find out you can't go out on like a draw four card in Uno. We did not realize these were the real rules of the game. Did that ever happen to you, Glenn?
Well, it's kind of like house rules, or, you know, it's like explaining the, you know, around the ballpark, if the ball gets trapped under the infield tarp, you know, then the play is dead, or here's a ground rule double if this happens. Each house has their own rules. I grew up as an only kid, but we'd play Monopoly, and either through my own brilliance or my folks letting me win, that was often the result, was that I would win. I'd always have the race car. That would be my Monopoly play piece, was the little race car. And I think... my mom would do the thimble, and I don't recall what my dad had, but I'd be zipping around with that race car and somehow always end up with a Monopoly and Boardwalk. But I think the best strategy, really, if you can swap and trade and do whatever you can to get the yellow and green properties on that corner of the board, and that usually results in pretty regular income from rent, but playing board games. I don't know. We found this this old, I don't think it was Mattel, maybe Milton Bradley commercial. I didn't have any of these games, but maybe they, if you give a listen, these sound kind of fun.
Now, from Milton Bradley, it's...
You take a card and put it in a rack. If you don't want it, put it back. Very first player to make the run says... What fun!
That's Racco, Milton Bradley's great card game for two, three, or four players of any age. Get
Racco! What fun!
And here's another great fun game from Milton Bradley.
Easy money, easy money. You buy some land and houses too. You make it rich from the rent, or you'll be flat broke when the mortgage is due. Either way, it's fun when you play. Easy money.
Easy money and Racco. Two good reasons that
Milton Bradley makes the best games in the world.
Get Racco
and easy money from MB.
I don't know that I've ever played either one of those games, but this I can tell you, Glenn, that didn't sound like easy money at all. It sounded like homelessness, and it's supposed to be a fun game. I don't know. When I played Monopoly with my husband, I always end up broke, and he always wins every single time. That's his game. So he was not an only child, but he was the youngest by far, and I don't know if he ever, he always claims that no one ever let him win, but I don't know. He's got like an ego trip when it comes to that game. So he's always getting that Park Place and building a hotel, and I'm out. I land on it once, I'm broke. I have mortgaging everything, so.
So he's good with Monopoly money. How about real money? Who controls the checkbook in the family?
Well, though? We do have to have like a tag team on this, because he does think that Monopoly money is different than real life money, right? But he's always looking for those opportunities. I think that was training him well to try to do well in the real world. But yeah, those interesting games by Milton Bradley.
Yeah, I don't know. You might have to go to a garage sale to find those nowadays. But the other one, good family, I don't know about good family fun, but in more modern times than Monopoly, but enjoyed Trivial Pursuit always, and played that with my wife once, just once, way back in the dating days. And as I think back, it's amazing we ended up married, perhaps because the game did not go her way. Even after a 3-pie piece lead, you know, on the way to getting five pieces of pie, answering all the Trivial Pursuit questions. And I won that one, and the game still exists. It's living in the attic of the garage, and it hasn't been touched in years and years and years and years. So if that says anything, well, maybe it's a good reason that we have an independent clinical social worker with us to deal with family relationships and games. Kim Morgan joins us from St. Louis this morning. Kim, good morning to you.
I didn't know I was going to have to wear my black and white referee outfit this morning for game night, but I will tell you, we nicknamed one of our games Fight in a Box. It's called Compatibility, and you play with couples, and it really sorts out the sheep and the goats when it comes to couples that get along and couples that don't. And we won't go into that game in great detail. That'll be a talk for a marriage topic next week, but for this week, I have a lot of interesting and fun information about game playing with the family, with kids, with aunts, with uncles, with grandparents. And there's amazing studies that will support a lot of what I'm talking about today, not just from the family and fun point of view, but also from research to helping with brain activation, helping old people be young at heart and young at mind. And it's very exciting to think about how we can bring generations together and do good for their mental and cognitive health as well.
Now, Kim, in the Morgan household, was playing games as a family activity something that you had long planned as, yeah, this ought to be part of our family life, or something that just was fun and continued to develop?
It came organically. My mom and I always used to play games. We loved playing games. And my dad played bridge with adult friends as well. He played card games and other, played pool and some other games. But mom and I were really the game players. And when I met my husband, he played RPG. Now, role-playing games, right? So you think about games with imagination. And one of our favorites is called RuneQuest. And talk about the old ancient ruins and what is out there to discover and what kind of imaginary beasts are out there to attack us while we're on a quest to find something. And it's interesting, the variation in games, because when we were growing up, right, we just literally had board games. And board games are mainly what I want to focus on today. But then came the era of video games, right, and hand-eye coordination and reflexes and being able to modulate what's on a screen with a hand controller. And then we also have the era of RPG games. But now there's also another one, Glenn, and these are the games that kids can play interactively on their phone. And one of my favorites was this past week we were on vacation with family, and it was July 4th weekend, and I walk into the room, and every young person is totally silent and on their phones. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We're on vacation. We're on the water. We have great weather. Why are you on your phones? Well, they were all actually playing a game together, but it was electronically through their phones. But they still had to have skill and patience and take turns and be creative. And the game was called Drawful, like awful. Awful drawings is the mix of it. So it's kind of fun to watch how young people today have adapted some of the age-old pastimes into modern technology, and yet they're still interacting, but they're doing it through electronic devices. And so I had to cool my heels and not get upset, because they were all playing a game together, and they were very quiet. Nobody was yelling, which was nice.
Oh, that is great, you know, and I guess I'm still more of the unfold the board and put it on the kitchen table and get the dice out, and then the game stops when the dice end up falling off the table and go under the stove. And
oh, there's such an art to that, yes.
You know, that's why it's always handy to have a yardstick never too far away to dig things out from those hard to reach spots. Talking about games today and building family relationships and more, excuse me, through friend relationships for that matter too, through board games and other related games. And if you've got experiences or favorite games you'd like to turn the audience on to, feel free to join us this morning, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Now, you know, we start out with little kids, Candyland, often one of those first games, and we're trying to, you know, teach how to read and count and all of those things. But we're teaching teamwork along the way, and we're teaching maybe keeping competitiveness in check. Now, Kim, when you talk about the game, well, that might well be called Fight in a Box, but any tips on playing games in a very competitive environment?
I think that that's a very important lesson to be learned. And any of these games, whether we talk about board games, video games, or role-playing games, they are competitive. We want to win. And there's nothing wrong with that. Where everybody gets a trophy, I don't understand. There are people that win the game and people that don't. And I think it's important to understand that people that don't win the game need to have a good grace and a good attitude about it. So a lot of times when we play these games, we need to help our children learn how to lose graciously, learn how to win graciously, not to gloat and to brag. Now, there can be some little subtle fun humor within the family, but sometimes it brings out the very best in people and sometimes the very worst. In fact, we had some new friends over that we had never met before, and I had been pre-told that they were very aggressive game players and not very great losers. And I'm like, well, we are very competitive. We are out to win. I'm not sure our first interaction should be a game to play. So, but I think for young people, it's important to talk about how to lose well and how to do better the next time. And it is a learning atmosphere. We learn to take turns. We learn facts about a game. We learn to respond to stressful situations. We also can model virtue as the older, hopefully more mature people. I'm not sure, Glenn, when I see some adults play games, I'm not sure that they're more mature. And I know that there are a lot of different games out there, and I want to talk, too, about where and how you access all these new games that are coming out that are actually more even to the liking of young people and some of the old classics, and what kind of virtues we can pull out of those as well.
Now, when we look at games becoming a super competitive environment, can some of that be, you know, a mirror to what's going on in the rest of a person's life? Maybe they don't have as much control as they feel they ought to have in their kind of regular day-to-day life, and a board game is there. You know, same thing as, rec league softball, and you think these adults, this is much easier than life at the office. Let's just have some fun. But some really, this is where they have to shine because they don't get a chance maybe in their regular life. Can that kind of behavior come out in board games too?
I think it does. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing because it helps us develop our own actual real life character. And I don't mean character like Bugs Bunny or Donald Duck. I mean our virtuous character of who we are, who God created us to be. If we can create through our games that we play how we want to be in the world, how we want to respond and develop our character over time in a game. So role-playing games that I talked about, RPG games, I know there's many of them that are seen as negative, but there are many that are incredibly positive and virtuous. And one of them, like I mentioned, is RuneQuest. Our children learn imagination. They learn how to be heroic. They learn to plan ahead, to anticipate others, geography, technology, math, statistics, history. All of this is wrapped into some of these kind of games. And they're incredibly insightful. And it teaches your children how to think. It teaches the adults how to think. And it teaches us what can we transfer from our game life to make us more virtuous in our real life. What did we do that was so heroic? What did we self-sacrifice in the game that we might be willing to do in real life? For example, a great example, your last hour, you spoke of the person from Hopkins, Minnesota that replaced the $20 for the blind person on your Glenn Story Corner. That was a virtuous act. What made him do that? What were going to be the consequences in his life that he had to sacrifice to do that kind of act? Well, these are the exact things that come out when you get to imagine who your character is and create who your character is in your mind. It's not so set in stone like in a board game of Monopoly or Life. Your character is kind of, yeah, you get to pick your cars or your thimbles, but you don't get to create an actual persona like you do in role-playing games. So that's a kind of a neat aspect of these kind of free-thinking games like role-playing games. But they're not the only kind of games that give us great virtue, that we have several other different kinds. And not only do they give us virtue, but again, I go back to there are cognitive benefits to all of these games that affect all of us, but especially those of us in aging society, shall we say, those of us over the age of 50 that need to have more consistent brain stimulation to ward off a lot of ailments that can come upon us in our later years.
I giggle as the years go by. I giggle when you talk about that. But and then, you know, the cognitive side of it, too. We have some dear friends across the street that love to play games and love to buy new ones and introduce us to those. And, you know, if it's a Friday night and it's getting later and we've been up doing early radio all week long, and, you know, like Friday night after 11 is a tough time to learn new rules to a new game. You know, can't we just play like Go Fish or something? You know, but I do appreciate that. Kim Morgan joining us this morning on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. We're talking about playing games. It's a great thing. Maybe there's a little extra time during the summer. Maybe it's a rainy day when we're at the cabin. Can't be out fishing or swimming for part of the day. We can whip out the board games. And there's a new generation of games out there, too, that can kind of go beyond just rolling the dice and counting up a few numbers or trying to steal all the money from the other guy and win the game. But what are some of those games and where we ought to look for some of those that can really help accidentally and kind of on purpose as well develop virtue, Kim?
Well, I think one of the games that kind of inspired me to want to talk about this a little bit more is called the Catholic Card Game. And it actually has some appearances by Father Mike Schmitz, Matt Frad with Pints with Aquinas. It's a card game, but it's kind of a table game that you finish someone else's sentence. So if you've ever played Apples to Apples, it's like that, only Catholic. And what struck me was it was extremely comical. It made kind of light of a lot of different aspects of being Catholic, but it also taught us, like, we were all on our phones looking this one card up, and why is everybody looking up this card? We didn't know what it meant. Dulia, hyperdulia, and latria. And I'm not going to tell you what it means, but I will tell you this.
I don't have time to look it up right now. I'm trying to do this radio show, but feel free to.
So how you worship Mary, or, well, not worship Mary, but pray to Mary, you give her honor and reverence, you give the Trinity latria, the full worship of our Lord and Savior in the Trinity. And then the dulia is how we pray to the saints for intercession. So dulia, hyperdulia, and latria, they build the saints, Mary, and then Christ in the Trinity. But nobody knew that when we were playing the game. So we learned something incredible. Not only did we learn it, like, that's the favorite card now. Like, anybody that's in the end knows they can play that card and win that round because we all got stuck on it one night. So we can learn things from games. There's a game from the 70s called The Ungame, and it asks open-ended questions. And nobody ever really wins, which is really aggravating for those of us that are competitive. But it asks questions like, how would your parents describe you? Give three reasons why you like yourself. Tell about a family tradition you enjoy. And they're not also fluffy and happy. Some of them are kind of hard questions to answer. And it opens up the insight into who you are as a person. It opens conversation. You get to know each other better. So I find that that's another great game. And I know a lot of you are listening saying, well, I don't own all these games. How am I ever going to get all these games? Well, actually, the library, oddly enough and greatly enough, will let you check them out for free. You can just check out lots of games. Also, there are local game stores now that pride themselves on having game nights where you just go in, you pull a game off the shelf you've wanted to learn to play, and you can play that game. And many of them serve some, you know, sodas and snacks to go along with it. Of course, it's part of their business model. But you can try out some games, have an outing as a family, and kind of do several things at once while you're out at some of these gaming stores and gaming resources. Also, a lot of nursing homes will carry cool games that you can play with the elderly. And again, studies show that it activates a brain arousal in the youth and in the elderly, which helps decrease ADHD, helps enhance memory so that it decreases Alzheimer's symptoms, and definitely decreases depression and anxiety. So we could go to a nursing home. We can do our good deed for the week. We can play some games, which are really fun, and we don't have to buy anything. So there's lots of ways that we can get involved in our community and with our families by using different kinds of games, whether they be the video games, the board games, the role-playing games, or these ones on their handheld devices like Drawful, where I draw awfully, and it's pretty awesome doing that.
Very good. Some great ideas for some new family games out there, and building community, building family, building those relationships, and maybe finding new reasons to fight. All of those things with board games. We hope not the latter. We'll keep those social workers busy. Thank you so much, Kim Morgan. Happy game playing, and here we hope the dice all land your way, and you do well, and keep Dr. Robert in check there. That's Mr.
Absolutely.
Morgan for those listening as well. Thanks so much, Kim. I look forward to chatting again soon, Lord willing. We continue with Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. It's no game trying to find a new job, especially if you're a little bit older, and there is some discrimination that still persists for old folks looking for jobs. We'll talk about that with Bruce Lockenhauer. He's coming up next as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air
on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. It's Glenn and Sarah in today. John has the day off. Ice cream and good deeds, the topics in our story corner before the hour is through. Some news headlines coming up at the top as well. But now we continue our series as we talk with career coach Bruce Lockenhauer on a regular basis. Bruce, many years in the industry, helping match up employers and future employees. And we've been talking about ageism and how that's a problem in the workplace as well. But before we get any further away from our games topic, Bruce, in the last couple minutes here, we've been talking about family games. Any particular games that you have played around the kitchen table there that might maybe shed some light onto the employability of those kids in the household?
Good morning, Glenn. It's a pleasure, as always, to be on Morning Air. So it's nice to hear your voice, and I'm happy to be here. You know, if you come into the Lockenhauer household, if any of my family members and or friends are listening, I'm sure they've got a big smile on their face. The game of choice is Mexican-trained dominoes, and we get into some fiercely competitive games, Glenn. I don't know if you've ever played, but there's one cardinal rule, and that's not sit right in front of a spouse, unless you dread spending the night on the floor or sleeping on the couch. But that's our favorite game, Glenn.
Oh, like our friend and previous guest Kim talked about, fight in a box might be what some of the games can be called. But you know, had to get your input on that as well. Well, Bruce, before we kind of dive into continuing the series on really for older workers dealing with some of the discrimination that's out there and looking for a new job, kind of the landscape is changing just a little bit with the general economy right now, huh?
It is, Glenn. It is. It's to me, as an economist trained as an undergrad, it's pretty obvious we're in a recession. It's interesting how the press is tiptoeing around it. The formal definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of a decline in growth, i.e. the economy is contracting. We had that. It was revised slightly upward in the first quarter. Second quarter has ended, and I don't know about you, Glenn, but I haven't seen much change. You know, inflation is still very high. Gas prices are affecting consumers' disposable income. When you're spending an extra $50 at the pump to fill up your truck, like we do here in Texas, that's $50 less than you have to spend on a new game to bring home to the family. So disposable income is down. You know, just haven't seen much change. So I'm very confident, unfortunately, that we are in an economic recession. But Glenn, the job market, the labor market, has a mind of its own and reacts differently. It's tied to the economy, but in a way that it lags the economy by quite a significant period of time. It takes a while for that slowdown to ripple through a large employer or even a smaller employer to get to the hiring needs. And we've been in such a chaotic job market, hottest job market I've ever seen. You mentioned all those years I've been doing this. Never have I seen a job market as hot as it is now, as it has been. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. It is, my view is, Glenn, that the job market has hit its peak, but it's still hot. There are still opportunities out there. There are certain segments where you can say, you know what, it's not going to happen. That would be mortgage lending, other interest rate sensitive markets, I think eventually the housing market, financial services. But for the most part, there are still good jobs out there. I mean, if you, the data hasn't changed. I mean, it shows, again, what I would suggest is a peak of the market. And we know where it's going to head, and it's going to head down. But it's not there yet. The quit rate is starting to tick down. Job postings are still high. They're just not growing as they had been every quarter. Unemployment is still near its all-time low. It's at 3.6%, with a 50-year low was 3.5% right before the pandemic and the quarantine. There's signs there too. The labor participation rate. This is the funky one I think economists are trying to figure out, and that is, why don't we have quite as many people working as we did before the pandemic? A lot of people point to retirees, but I think the other thing that is a meaningful statistic is a lot of people are staying home to help their kids with school. They may not be happy with the school situation. You have dual income couples that may be one income couples. But overall, that market is still really good. So what does it mean, Glenn, for our listeners? I don't know what you're seeing. You still see the help wanted signs out there. Again, certain markets, forget it. And you've seen some somewhat alarming things happen. The crypto exchange market, there's a company called Coinbase, which was rescinding job offers. I mean, that's almost unheard of. You quit your job, you're ready to start and get trained, and all of a sudden the offer isn't there anymore. The position's not there anymore. We talked about mortgage lending. The PC market's interesting because computer companies did so well in the quarantine. People had to outfit a whole new office. That was their home office. And now they're outfitted. So sales are down, and that market has tightened up. And you heard about Tesla and Scott's and a few others that have announced some reductions. But those are pockets, and they're harbingers, Glenn. They're signs of what's coming. But still, if you're in a place where something's changed, you're not comfortable, my suggestion is to take a good pass at the job market now, because it may be a couple of years. Once that labor market catches up to the economy, and as a lagging indicator, even after the economy starts going up, the job market will take a while for it to take off again.
Bruce Lackenauer, our guest, talking about the job market right now, and we'll get into a little bit about how ageism still prevails sometimes in terms of discrimination for folks with a little more experience trying to get that next job, or maybe the final big job of their career as well. Bruce, I think it is wise to be aware of the larger economic situation out there. Sometimes if it doesn't fit the narrative of the administration, sometimes we don't hear as much about it as we might otherwise, depending on those that kind of write the news narrative in large. Do we find, with all the activity that we're kind of starting to come down from a little bit with the job market, that that's been largely a function of replacing jobs that were lost or given up during COVID times?
Yeah, well, there was the whole phenomenon of, call it the Great Resignation, is how it was coined by a Texas A&M business professor. Microsoft and LinkedIn call it the Great Reshuffling. I like calling it the Great Reawakening, where people, having been working from home, discovered that there were maybe advantages to that and just rethought things and were reawakened to what might be really important to them in their lives, not just work. We Americans live to work. The Mexicans say that we don't work to live like they do. But a lot of people change jobs. And I talked to the head of talent, Glenn, at one of the major PC companies, a household name, who said, what we're seeing is people aren't as flighty, as they were with this great quit rate, where they're looking at different jobs, they're hopping, they're moving, but rather they're starting to get entrenched a little bit in where they are, because they see, I mentioned that PC industry having entered a down cycle. They see what's going on, and things aren't moving quite as fluidly. So the whole job market just was again, like none we've ever seen. And there's still an acute need for talent. I mean, I want to stress that to our listeners. You know, with the exception of certain pockets, companies need, and frankly, even in a recession, and my guess is in future shows, Glenn, we'll talk about this, how to find the dream job in a down market, in what everyone agrees is a recession, not just certain economists like yours truly. There's always a demand for great talent. And there's a way, you know, by going through it smartly with the 12 steps, to position yourself, to network in, and to be that choice hire for that dream employer.
Bruce, we hear about how Wall Street is always just a little bit ahead of the news, you know, the market acting almost before it reacts sometimes. And it seems like you're telling us that the labor market is a little bit behind the reality. Why is that? Or is it when a recession is finally acknowledged by one and all, then things catch up in a hurry, sadly, and sometimes for the most recently hired employees?
You know, it's an interesting question. Why is the labor market a lagging indicator? Why does it lag the general economy? It does. I can tell you that. I've seen so many of these cycles. I know that both going into the recession, it appears the labor market has its head in the clouds. It doesn't know what's going on with the general economy until it starts finally getting dragged down. And then on the other side, as the economy is starting to race along again, the labor market is licking its wounds and takes a while before it kicks in. My sense is companies just, you know, we look backwards, Glenn, when we look at data, when we look at employment data, all the data that we look at. And as a company, you may be sensing things, but it takes a while for it to work through the entire company until it gets to that hiring manager and he or she learned that they have a hiring freeze, that they can't go about hiring to achieve the growth targets that they have. So it's part of it is looking back at data. Part of it is it's just the way it is. It's the market, that labor market has always been a lagging indicator or lagging the general economy. Again, for our listeners right now here in the summer of 2022, it's good because if you've discovered you love a hybrid model, you've got a new boss, or your company has mandated that everybody comes back to work, and that will adversely affect your personal life and your family life and your spiritual life, now's when you should be putting into place the 12 steps and finding that dream job so that you continue to have dinner with your family, get to the sporting events, whatever it might be that's of most value to you and your family.
Our phone number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, as we jump back into our weeks-long discussion here about ageism in the workplace and some of the challenges of older workers in finding that next job. And, you know, this is just another reason to maybe, you know, get on the ball if we're kind of thinking about it to make that move before, you know, the employer notices the recession out there, Bruce.
Yeah, so, Glenn, age discrimination is rampant. You know, when we first teed up this issue, John, your co-host, went and found a AARP study that cited that it is at an all-time high, and it's something north of 80% of experienced workers, I like calling us, have felt it in one fashion or another. And there are natural reasons why it occurs, but the fact is, it's there. And if you are, you know, I would say even over 40 or into your 40s and beyond, it's good to be aware of it, how it manifests itself, and there are some specific steps that are critically important for you to take, for you to have the best you can in a career. And when it's most prevalent, Glenn, is when you're doing something we're talking about, looking for a new job. Then it raises its ugly head. But there's hope. There's great news. There are key ways that you can overcome it. We had a great caller. I hope we hear from callers. I learned more from callers on this than I do in all the research and experience I have. We had a great caller last time, God bless her, in her 60s, who gave us a lesson or two on how to combat ageism.
And again, that number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. There'll be some strategies we'll talk about that apply across a variety of sectors in the workplace. But In part, can it be kind of depending on the job? We kind of get the idea that tech stuff, right? That's more for young people. I think, it's not a common example, but in terms of radio. Now, for talk radio, we often get people from a variety of walks of life that haven't necessarily spent a lot of time doing radio per se. But for those that have, kind of starts out, you know, you're young, coming out of school, you want to rock and roll and play music and all of that. And if these guys last into the radio career, they eventually move into talk radio, and actually to be able to talk about a wide variety of things, that's where age helps. You've had experience in a wide variety of things. But is it really, in general, we're looking at ageism, you know, kind of across the board?
We are, and you hit the tech issue. That's one of those descriptors. That's one of the discriminating points that will be applied to you as an experienced worker, whether you like it or not. So you need to be able to demonstrate, we talked about this last time, that you're tech savvy. Glenn, I don't know if you've got a blog or a podcast or have adopted new technology. And my advice to our experienced workers who are out there to appear tech savvy is, you know, grab if you've got a younger friend or relative. I've got a nephew who said, Uncle Bruce, if you want to reach out to my generation, you got to start YouTube videos on this topic and get them out there and get them posted. So there are, it's important that our experienced workers or our friends that are experienced workers have arrows in their quiver to address each of these stereotypes. And Glenn, you hit on one, that you're not tech savvy. And we can be tech savvy. And it's not rocket science. We've all learned things throughout our careers. Being a lifelong learner, that's another one, which shows mental agility and that you're open and adaptive. We talked about that last time. There are some others that we need to talk about.
Well, it works good for talk radio, too. Being curious, you know, maybe not just settling for, okay, we did this, and this is all we want to do. We don't want to know or learn anything else. Not only is that less interesting in real life, but it can be a great hindrance in the workplace, can it?
No question. I call it being a lifelong learner and being mentally agile. You need to show that you continue to grow and continue to learn, because this will get into what I want to hit on next, which is one of the key stereotypes is that experienced workers are set in their ways and they don't work well with younger workers. If you show, Glenn, just like you're talking about, that you are mentally agile, a lifelong learner, you continue to expand and grow, that's one of the important pillars of being able to demonstrate that you're not stuck in your ways, that you can, that you are, you've got, as you said, those lifelong lessons you can apply to new situations that come up.
Well, let's those of us with minds more agile than our knees, perhaps take a quick break to stretch, and then we'll come back and get into some great steps for success here with Bruce Lochenour as we continue to take a look at some good tips for you in the workplace as Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. In the quiet of the evening, or the quiet of the start of the day, coming up, it's Patrick and Cyrus on the way in about 10 here at Relevant Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. Morning Air rolls on. John has the day off, but Glenn and Sarah doing our best to keep things rolling. In the meantime, we want to keep your career rolling until the very end. Never too late to start something new. That's the first of many steps for folks who've had a little experience in the workplace to battle ageism and get that new position. Bruce Lochenour joins us to continue that look. Bruce, you have some great tips for employees who've been around a while. And as much as I've been locked into radio for, I don't know, 40, 41 years or something like that, it's never too late to start something new, though.
It's not. Glenn, it's not. It never is. And it's so much fun hearing the stories of folks that have started new things. And I think of a lot of my peers and my colleagues. And at this stage for experienced workers, that's one of the things that's interesting to do, which is to take a look at where your colleagues, Glenn, from when you launched your career in radio at whatever year, what are they doing today? You know, you might find that they're, I mentioned the podcasting, they may have a Substack account where they're doing regular podcasts, and that's how they're making their nut, and they're doing quite well, thank you very much. But no, it's never too late. And the 12 steps that we have discussed on these shows are every bit as important but they're slight with a slightly different focus when you are an experienced worker, because you have to be able to position yourself differently than you did. It's interesting, Glenn, because it's when you started off, you know, you wanted to have that resume showing everything you've ever done, because you hadn't done that much. You were young, you were inexperienced, but at a certain point, that works against you. By having a litany of stuff on there, it gets confusing to an employer, and they start to think, oh, you are, this is the kiss of death for an experienced worker, overqualified. Meaning, you're going to get bored in this role, you're probably too expensive for me to hire, and although, you know, you might be able to, it looks like you've done what I need done, I'm afraid that there are other things that you're going to want to do that I don't need done right now, and so forget it, you get put on the pile. So, you've got to be very focused in how you go about this whole process, the 12 steps of finding and landing your dream job. But, you know, before we get there, I think it's critical that we talk about, because there are a lot of subtleties, the resume being one of them. But back to what you said right before we went on the break, Glenn, you talked about how our knees may not be what they used to be. So that's one of the stereotypes that we got to hit head on as an experienced worker, and that is high energy. So if those knees aren't working, go to a gym that has got upper body workout things. There's like a bicycle you can do for your arms. Do the weights for your arms. You need to be able to show that you are a high energy person. I don't care how you do that. My father-in-law is in a wheelchair, but he goes to the gym. He's got a trainer, and he actually has an at-home little bicycle for his upper body because he's got some leg issues. So there are ways that you can position yourself as high energy. We talked about positioning yourself as being mentally agile. And then we've also talked about, you know, just today, but we talked last time about being loyal. I mean, people say, oh, gee whiz, you know, you're not going to stay long because you got that big resume, which we're going to make small, but you're going to want to do something else. You're going to get tired or bored doing this. No. We turn that on its head as an experienced worker by showing that we have a great track record of digging into something and seeing it through, be that 5 years, whatever, by showing how we've done that in the past versus today. Oh my gosh, I'm on a search right now for a client, Glenn, where we're trying to find a director of strategy. And it is so hard to find someone who's been in a job for more than 2 years. So these stereotypes can be turned on their head and need to be, and you need to be able to address them and hit them head on. The one that we haven't talked about, though, is the one that we alluded to earlier, which is working well and collaborating with others, especially younger workers. And, you know, my advice is that you need to be able to demonstrate that you are currently and have experience working with folks of all ages. It doesn't have to be in the job market. Hopefully it is. But a not-for-profit in your personal activities, what have you. We've got a wonderful series that we're hosting at our house called Cana Vox, putting voice to marriage, the wedding feast at Cana. And we have couples of all ages. We have those who have young kids, those who are hoping to have kids soon, to grandparents in the group. And it's fantastic because it's getting the different perspectives of things and then following up. And then in my activity, you talk about your knees. I love to surf, and one of my best buddies who's a surf friend of mine has got a house full of young kids. And that keeps me in tune with what's going on at all ages. But you need to be able to demonstrate that. So we've talked about flattening all those stereotypes, Glenn. But the other thing is, Glenn, are you overqualified? That can stop the process in its tracks. And what does it mean if you unpack it a little bit? Again, we talked about it. It sounds as if, you know, you're fabulous, Glenn, at Morning Air, but gee whiz, you've done this, you've done that, you've done that. The point is, you are fabulous at Morning Air, and that's what you need to get through, is that you need to be tightly focused on presenting the relevant skills and experience that the company needs now. And the best way to do this, and this gets back to agility, is to ask questions of the hiring manager. Wow, what's the situation that you're dealing with right now? How's that impacting you and others on the team? And then not coming in and sounding like, oh, I've done that five times before, here's my playbook. No, just maybe sharing some times when you've addressed similar issues. You're not sure what this issue is going to be like, but here are some of the ways that you've helped companies address those issues in the past. So, and again, if you're applying for Morning Air, Glenn, to be a host at Morning Air, you want to, on that resume, not have the 15 different things that you've done throughout your media, but just the last few years and what you've done that looks just like what they need done here. And the last point I want to make on overqualified is, again, if I look at a resume, Glenn, like yours, I'm sure, which is full with lots of stuff, I'm going to think, oh, wow, you're far too expensive. There are ways to address that. And that is, I'm more affordable than you think. We can talk about this down the road. By doing your research, knowing what they pay, and then structuring things so there are bonuses tied to your performance so that you can get a win-win, so that you can be affordable but also get fairly compensated. So does that help?
Good advice from Bruce Lockenauer this morning. It's all the time for all the advice we have. Now, Bruce, we'll just have to have you back again real soon and continue this series about getting that dream job no matter what your age is. Bruce, thank you so much for your good work on and off the air with us. We continue with Morning Air now here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app with today's Story Corner. Here in ice cream season, we've dug one up from the bottom of the freezer from a couple of years back, a story out of a DQ called A Real Treat from Yahoo News. When a visually impaired customer accidentally dropped a $20 bill at a Hopkins, Minnesota Dairy Queen, employee Joey Pruzak was shocked by what happened next. The lady behind him just picked it up and put it in her purse, he told Yahoo News, as if no one saw it. What Pruzak did inspired another customer to write an email to the store manager praising the 19-year-old for his calm and kindness. That email made it onto Reddit, was picked up by the Daily Mail, and quickly turned Pruzak into a nominee for the Nice Guy Hall of Fame, if such a place did exist. Pruzak had been working at Dairy Queen since he was 14. He told Yahoo News he recognized the visually impaired customer, saying he's a regular, always pays with a debit card. He doesn't use a wallet, so when he pulled out his card, the cash fell to the ground. After the woman picked up the 20 and put it in her purse, Pruzak said he confronted her about it. He said, "Ma'am, can you please return the gentleman's money?" The woman denied that she took the cash. It was kind of a scene, Pruzak said. I told her what she did was extremely disrespectful and she had to leave. She did, but she never gave back the money. So Pruzak went above and beyond. He walked to the customer who'd lost the 20 and gave him 20 from his own pocket. "I felt it needed to be done," he said. The man thanked him, and Pruzak didn't really think anything of it, just going back to work. Flash forward several days, Pruzak's manager gets an email from a customer who witnessed the exchange. He said, "Why didn't you tell me?" Pruzak explained, "Oh, it didn't cross his mind." He said, "It just felt like the right thing to do." Galatians 5:13 tells us, "You, my brothers, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love." That's our story today. You can check it out again in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app or the Relevant Radio website at relevantradio.com, or send us your suggestions for the Story Corner. Do that morningair@relevantradio.com. The email morningair@relevantradio.com. You can also access the text and audio each day too at the Glenn Story Corner Facebook page. More coming up, news headlines with Tim and right around the corner. And after that, we've got Patrick and Cyrus coming up with the answers to all of your faith questions. They don't have an answer that you haven't got a question for. Coming up next here, more on the way on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. And thanks to producers Sarah and Gabby today as well.